It's Friday, May 14th. Take a deep breath. We start here. In a quantum leap forward, the CDC says masks are now virtually unnecessary for vaccinated Americans.
You can put your mask away.
This guidance is not complicated, but the implications could be. We'll walk you through it all. Paying the ransom was not an option until it was paid.
We've got to recognize that the free market's not going to solve this problem.
National security experts say we survived this cyber attack, but the real crisis has only begun. And the money is theoretical. The greenhouse gases aren't.
A lot of the energy used to power those computers is not clean energy.
Why the world's most popular cryptocurrency just ran into a buzzsaw. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. One of the most difficult and perhaps overdue decisions of last year was this directive from the CDC that Americans should be wearing masks to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus. That recommendation stayed with us for more than a year.
When I first started at CDC about 2 months ago, I made a promise to you. I would tell you the truth, even if it was not the news we wanted to hear.
Not even 6 weeks ago, the new director for the CDC was telling us the time for vigilance is not over. In fact, she grew emotional talking about a sense of impending doom.
We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared. Today, I have several exciting announcements to share with you.
Well, yesterday, that same head of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, made an announcement that was once again momentous, and an announcement that once again some said was overdue. She told the country, if you're fully vaccinated, you can feel okay taking off that mask just about anywhere.
If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment.
This was not just, yeah, take it off 6 feet away from other people, or take it off outside, or take it off if you know everyone else around you is vaccinated. This was basically telling America, if you are vaccinated, you are protected. Full stop. A watershed moment for the country, and especially for the 35% of Americans who are fully vaccinated at the moment. Let's dig into this with the guy who once stood in Dr. Rochelle Walensky's shoes, Dr. Richard Besser, former acting chief of the CDC, now the head of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Dr. Besser, let's just start with the guidance. If I have been fully vaccinated, then what?
Yeah, I mean, this, Brad, this is huge. This is a turning point for us in terms of the pandemic in the United States. What it's saying is, if you're fully vaccinated, so 2 weeks after the one dose, if it's a one dose vaccine, or 2 weeks after your second dose, if it's two dose vaccine, you can put your mask away. You know, unless you're on public transit or you're going on a plane, put your mask away, go back to your life as you knew it. That's absolutely incredible. And it's going to take a little while for people's hearts to catch up with their minds. Because for so many people, it took a while to get comfortable wearing a mask and what you could do with it. Taking it off and getting close to people, that is going to be a big change.
But like, are there places where I should still be wearing a mask? Like, what are there gray areas? What are the things I should and should not be doing here, according to the CDC?
From the CDC, it's a short list. So if you're in a homeless shelter, if you're in a healthcare facility, if you're in a correctional facility, those are places where masks are still recommended. But according to the CDC, here's some stuff you can do without a mask if you're fully vaccinated.
Anyone who is fully vaccinated can participate in indoor and outdoor activities, large or small, without wearing a mask or physical distancing.
You can visit a barber or a hair salon. You can go to an indoor shopping center or a museum. You can go to the movies. You can sing in an indoor choir. You can go to a church service. You can go to a bar or a restaurant.
Once you are fully vaccinated, 2 weeks after your last dose, you can shed your mask.
These are things that people do, and you can do them now without a mask.
Wow. Like, these are not small, uncrowded, like these have crowds.
Well, the first thing to recognize is that these are recommendations from the CDC, and every state, every locality gets to make their own rules. And a lot of states will take these and run with them, but others will not. And there are other states that were already doing this.
I think Florida, you know, we've had our restaurants operating at full capacity since the summer, And it's been good. People are happy, and obviously we trust people to make their own decisions. And if that's something,
they were ahead of the science, and basically we're practicing bad public health policy. But what I expect to see is that a lot of states now will take this information and change what they're currently recommending.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. So from an epidemiological perspective here, because as of yesterday, the thinking was, listen, you're not going to get, you might not get really bad COVID here, but you could still theoretically transmit COVID to someone else. You're wearing a mask to protect others around you. Has that changed? Like, do we have new information that you cannot transmit this disease to somebody else? Or are we just sort of playing fast and loose?
Yeah. So what Dr. Walensky laid out was a bunch of different evidence.
So several things have happened in the last 2 weeks.
Evidence that the vaccines in use are extremely effective, not just in the trials, but as they've been used in communities in different countries.
In Israel, there was a demonstrated 97% vaccine effectiveness against symptomatic and 86% effectiveness against asymptomatic infection in over 5,000 healthcare workers.
Very effective at preventing infection. The other bit of information is that cases in the United States continue to go down to the lowest levels we've seen since last September. Hospitalizations down, deaths are down, thankfully.
Finally, we know that in the rare event that people get infected after a vaccine, the resulting infection is more likely to have a lower viral load, be shorter in duration, and likely less risky of transmission to others.
The other piece is that there's more and more information that people who are fully vaccinated are very unlikely to transmit to other people.
I see.
It can still happen. But when they look at people who get infection or test positive, who've been vaccinated, they're finding pretty low levels of virus in their noses.
That's
very encouraging.
But then, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I just want to be really clear about what people can and cannot transmit here. Are we getting reality check from a place like the New York Yankees clubhouse, where apparently everyone is vaccinated, and yet we've seen now an eighth member of that team test positive for COVID? Does that not show us that there can be breakthrough cases?
Well, you have to look at that, and you have to look at it closely. But the interesting thing is they weren't sick. So they tested positive. But do we care so much about testing positive? What we really care about is preventing serious infection, hospitalizations, and death.
Oh, they got it from someone, but they didn't have symptoms.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're a business owner.
Yes.
Are you going to mandate in your business, or are you going to leave it up to people?
I think for now, I'm going to keep everybody with the masks for now.
Well, and so you touched on this, how kind of weird this could potentially get. If you, like you said, there are states and cities and companies can still tell you, no, you have to wear a mask indoors here. But are there could the grocery store put up a policy saying if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask inside, but if you're not vaccinated, you should wear a mask inside? Like, could they enforce that or even just voluntarily get people to silo themselves like that?
Well, you could. You could set up rules where people who are vaccinated can take off their masks and interact as they otherwise would, and people who are not vaccinated should need to either still wear their masks or work remote.
You keep saying until a magical number. When would that magical number be?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I hope it's at 8 o'clock tonight. I mean, I don't know when the magical number will be. I guess when it's up to the people.
Another piece of this, Brad, that's come up is that while there's vaccines for most people, there still are no vaccines for children under 12. And so parents wonder, what do they need to do? And in those situations, those children are still to be wearing masks. Outdoors, it's a different story. You know, but it's a safer place to be. And I expect that CDC will start to liberalize the activities that children can do outside, even without a mask on. But for now, it's wearing a mask if you're not vaccinated, regardless of age.
Yeah, and the CDC said, like, we're still actually looking at, like, summer camps, for example, and how that's going to work. But last question then for you, Dr. Besser. Based on this kind of, like, if you're vaccinated, you're good. If you're not vaccinated, you're really not. Like, there's still a lot of dangers out there. Would we be getting closer to something like vaccine passports, where if we're talking about companies that are nervous about who's vaccinated and who's not, that they're going to want some sort of like universal system where it's verified somehow rather than like playing the honor system for the next year?
Well, if you're an institution, an organization that wants proof, yeah, you have to go to that kind of system. If what you're saying is that the risk is really being borne by the person who is not vaccinated, then no. You say, people who are vaccinated, you can take off your masks. People who aren't should still wear those masks. If you choose to take off your mask and you're not vaccinated, you're facing some risks, and those risks are on you.
Like the grocery store was saying, we're trying to protect our people. Well, if your people are vaccinated, they're taken care of, essentially.
Exactly. And we are at a point where there's enough vaccine for everyone in America who wants to be vaccinated.
A huge moment. Dr. Richard Besser, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Next up on Start Here, we don't negotiate with terrorists, but ransomware attackers? Well, the official stance of the government is, you gotta do what you gotta do. We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
When you hear there's been an attack in this country, immediately you think of bombings, loss of life, damage. But there's also this sense of fear, of panic, of Americans not knowing exactly what's around the corner. Some of the worst attacks even result in Americans turning on each other. We lose trust in the whole system that was supposed to protect us.
Another developing story tonight, one of the nation's biggest fuel pipelines forced to shut down after a cyber attack.
What happened with the Colonial Gas Pipeline on the East Coast this week was not a bombing. It didn't even affect really the gas itself. After a few days of checks, the company, Colonial, said it was able to get the pipeline flowing again.
How many gas stations have you tried?
8. This is my 6th. Everything is like out of gas.
But when you look at the scenes at gas stations this week, did this look like a calm, unfearful, safe nation?
I want to show you this tweet now from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, and it says simply this: do not fill plastic bags with gasoline.
I want to update everyone on the ransomware cyber attack that impacted on the Colonial Pipeline over this past week.
And so even as the supply issues continued to subside yesterday, President Biden felt the need to address the nation, to come out and say, we're okay, but this was an attack. His national security team clearly sees threats like this and says, this ain't over. Let's go to Elizabeth Newman. She's a former DHS Assistant Secretary for Counterterrorism and Threat Prevention. She's now an ABC News contributor. And Elizabeth, let's start with who was responsible for this, because people had said, you know, Eastern Europe, Russia might be involved. Is that not the case? Are these just sort of gangs around Eastern Europe? Who is responsible for something this big?
Yeah, I mean, they are gangs. And they vary in level of sophistication. Dark side's relatively new.
We do not believe, I emphasize, we do not believe the Russian government was involved in this attack. But we do have strong reason to believe that the criminals who did the attack are living in Russia.
And that's what you heard Biden talk about is, okay, we feel fairly confident that Russia did not direct this attack. That's good to know, because the Russian intelligence services, the SVR, have been known to use groups like this to achieve whatever their aims are. It appears maybe that's not what was at play here, that these guys were just trying to make a quick buck. Might actually have kind of panicked when they realized that this, you know, bubbled over into like the collective American conscience.
I didn't know there was a gas situation. I just pulled up here and they don't have any.
Most of the time, nobody's paying attention to it, because like the average payout's around $300,000. You know, it's the kind of thing that if you're a board member, you care about. But if you're a shareholder, you're probably like, sunk cost.
But so let me ask you, because throughout the week, we had asked if Colonial would pay that cost, whether they would pay a ransom to these attackers. Sources were telling us, like, this company's got no intentions of paying this ransom. Then came this report from Bloomberg, which we are now able to report as well, that a ransom was paid, like, in the low millions of dollars. So I don't know. Would you do that, Elizabeth? If you were a company, would you just cough it up?
Look, there's a reason I think that the federal government has not mandated that you can't pay. And the reason is because, A, we don't have any better options for them when we talk about kidnappings or, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists, right? Like, there's that principle of the matter that, like, hey, every time we pay them, it just incentivizes them to do this again. Mm. So as a community, we need to kind of get together and figure out how to solve this. But yeah, I mean, the cyber insurance companies in most cases are going to...
What's a cyber insurance company?
Okay, so insurance, like we insure businesses and buildings and our cars, cyber insurance companies will get brought in when there's an attack, and they will tell their client, you need to pay the money.
Covering Riviera Beach, where tonight its residents could address city council after they agreed to pay ransom to hackers.
Ransomware attacks, they've been around for a couple of years. It really spiked last year. And what that has done is it's given data points to the attackers to figure out kind of what the level of the realm of the possible is.
It all started on May 28th after a city employee clicked on an email that would cripple the city's computer system.
This company is this size. They had this kind of profit last year, and they're insured by this cyber insurance company.
Insurance will cover most of the untraceable 65 Bitcoin demanded, equal to about $600,000.
So we can ask for this. They're going to tell us this, and we can negotiate somewhere in the middle.
Right. And the payment here wasn't even necessarily for the pipeline itself. It was just for access to their own information, which is kind of standard for the way this works. But if it seems like the U.S. government doesn't, I don't know what it's doing, what should the rest of us do going forward?
Yeah, so the U.S. government not knowing what it's doing, it definitely feels that way. And having
don't want to impugn your, the government.
The whole crew. But it's fair because it feels like, and we're not on camera, but it feels like fingers are pointing every which way. Like, oh, it's that person's responsibility to do X and this other person have to do Y.
We heard Secretary Buttigieg just mention the desire to include more funding for cyber security. The American Jobs Plan. Why wasn't that included in the president's initial plan? And is it a must-do for you now?
Well, I think what he's really talking about, the secretary was talking about, is how the grant funding is determined.
And a couple of years ago, we asked a DHS for state and local governments to prioritize cyber in their spending. They did not like that. The states pitched a fit, went to the Hill, complained to their congressman. The congressman came to DHS and said, why are you making them invest in cyber? So, which is a very normal thing when it comes to grant dollars. People get used to the grant money and they want to buy the new fire truck. They want to, you know, they had a plan for that money to invest in something else.
You know, I think at this point it will include, as the discussions continue, tying specific grants to recipients' implementation of cybersecurity goals, using tax credits to finance.
We're at an inflection point. We, I hope, choose to heed the lesson from this example. And we need to be a little bit more open to regulation in this space. There's just not an economic incentive for a private company or state and local government to invest in security.
I cannot dictate that the private companies do certain things relative to cybersecurity.
So we kind of need the regs to create kind of that minimum baseline standard so that you're not losing a competitive advantage by investing in security instead of lowering your costs for your customer. So we've got to recognize that the free market's not going to solve this problem. It's probably time for stricter regulations.
It doesn't make sense for a company economically, like, to build all the roads from every house so people can get to your business. But if no one builds the roads, if there's no government to make that infrastructure, then that is just a bunch of dirt and dust. That is the Wild West. All right, Elizabeth Newman, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
As we just discussed, the thing about technology is the moment you think you know which way it's heading, it changes. I mean, it's probably the definition of technology. But that also holds true for technologies like Bitcoin.
Bitcoin hit a record high over the weekend.
Bitcoin alert, the cryptocurrency making big gains this week.
Throughout this year, the value of some cryptocurrencies have skyrocketed. Tesla announced it would start treating Bitcoin like good old-fashioned dollars. But this week, Tesla said, actually, we're not going to do that anymore. And Bitcoin took a massive dive.
It was at 57 or 58,000.
and it went as low as 46,000.
And the reasons why are about more than just fickle markets. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze covers the economy. She's with us now. Elizabeth, Tesla, electric car company, they said this was actually an environmental decision on their part. Like, what would the environmental issue be with a digital currency? Like, you don't even have to print it on paper.
That's right, Brad. You wouldn't think of a digital currency as something that's not environmentally friendly, but it turns out it is.
Cryptocurrency is a good idea on many levels, and we believe it has a promising future, but this cannot come at great cost to the environment.
This was a big U-turn on the part of Tesla after saying that it would accept Bitcoin and now saying it won't as a form of payment for its cars. And the reason they gave is that the mining of Bitcoin, the way that Bitcoin is created, is not good for the environment. And that's because it requires a lot of energy, and a lot of the energy that's used comes in the form of fossil fuels.
The whirring sound you're hearing is the sound of 1,800 servers computing.
So the way that Bitcoins are created is through a process called mining. Obviously, this is not actual digging into the ground to find physical Bitcoins. Instead, these supercomputers are essentially competing against each other to mine Bitcoins by solving super complex algorithms. And whoever wins, whoever solves the puzzle, the algorithm first, the reward is that you create a Bitcoin token.
Welcome to my mining farm. Wow.
What a lot of miners ended up doing is creating these essentially farms of computers where you just had rows and rows of these supercomputers solving these complex algorithms. And that ends up using a lot of computer power. And a lot of the energy used to power those computers is not clean energy. In fact, it comes from sources like coal.
It costcosts a lot in terms of energy. Probably a small country is the total usage.
This is something that we heard Elon Musk specifically point out, saying Bitcoin mining uses coal, and that's not a good thing. That doesn't really jive with Tesla's electric vehicle goal. But this isn't really something new. We know that Bitcoin is consuming a lot of energy, and this is something that's been out there for a long time from environmentalists.
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, if we knew this a year ago and Tesla decides a few months ago, hey, we're all in on Bitcoin, baby, why would you abandon it now? Are there other issues for companies like Tesla or whoever that are super stocked up in digital currency?
I think there are a couple of important points about why now from Tesla. And by the way, with Elon Musk, you never really know. He changes his mind a lot. It's pretty volatile. We do know that Tesla is still holding on to its stake in Bitcoin. So at the same time that they announced they'd start accepting Bitcoin as a form of payment, they also made a huge purchase of Bitcoin, $1.5 billion worth. And they're still holding on to that investment. In fact, it's been a really good investment for them as the price of Bitcoin has gone up. But we are seeing just how volatile these cryptocurrencies are.
Very few people actually paid for their Tesla cars with Bitcoin. The bulk of Tesla's Bitcoin holdings, they were outright purchases by the company.
They are certainly not as stable as traditional U.S. dollars or any other central bank-backed currency would be. That's one factor. Another factor is just the overall growing backlash that we are seeing about the environmental harm. So we saw.
So that is a real concern among some of these Bitcoin, like among Bitcoin enthusiasts. They are starting to grapple with that. That's real.
It's real. And by the way, a lot of Bitcoin mining takes place in China. And we do know that China is still very heavily reliant on coal as an energy source.
Big changes have been proposed in Dresden, New York, right along Seneca Lake at the Green Ridge Generation Power Plant.
Very interestingly, some states here in the U.S. are actually trying to lure in Bitcoin miners as a way to kind of resurrect their struggling coal industries.
The current 65,000 square foot facility already houses 7,000 Bitcoin miners.
Obviously, this is moving in the opposite direction that a lot of people would want to see when it comes toward renewable energy sources. So there is an effort to try to find out if there's a more eco-friendly way to create cryptocurrencies. The problem is that Bitcoin is so popular, and this is really the fundamental way that it's been created. A lot of people really believe in this mining process. For now, the mining is just continuing as these cryptocurrencies gain popularity.
Yeah, we've seen some companies claiming that they don't actually need these huge server farm operations to mine their currencies, and their value has really gone up this week, although they don't necessarily hold a candle to some of these bigger cryptocurrencies. And even regardless, even if you had solar power, just to all the air conditioners you need to cool down these huge servers, that is just yet more greenhouse gases into the air every day just to solve completely meaningless math problems. Elizabeth Schulze, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brad.
right, we got to step away for one more quick break. But if you want that time back, I'll trade you for it. More in a bit.
All right, guys, we are live here with our first break of the night.
And one last thing. You're listening to what's become known as a box break. It's like an unboxing video on YouTube, but specifically for someone opening a new pack of trading cards. The difference between this and just showing people that new vacuum cleaner you've gotten is people will bid money on these cards coming out of these boxes sight unseen.
Oh my gosh! One of one LeBron Spellbound! Holy moly!
You might have noticed that during the pandemic, there's been a trading card boom. Baseball cards, but also basketball, football cards. And the rule used to be the real money makers here were old ones, classics, a Honus Wagner card from 1909. And to be sure, with collectors trapped inside and the GameStop crowd looking for new investments,
Michael Jordan! Oh,
an old collectible is more valuable than ever.
And the Jordan sticker! Yeah, this grade's a PSA 10 is like 35, 50,000.
But the market has exploded for new collectibles, hence these box breaks.
Oh, Zion to 25.
Card companies have begun including super rare, even one-of-a-kind stuff in their packs. A Mike Trout rookie card was actually autographed by Trout himself and then was auctioned off for nearly $4 million. That is more than that famous Honus Wagner card. A card featuring Michael Jordan and LeBron James together included pieces from their jerseys. See, these companies are creating what matters in collectibles, scarcity and hype.
So it's almost like the golden ticket Willy Wonka theory. You put certain cards that are really tough to get and there's big value. They're hard to get, but you might get it.
But recently, traders have gotten so competitive over these things that it's become dangerous.
Brookfield police responded to a fight in the Target parking lot.
Target had to suspend trading card sales after men fought over them in a nearby parking lot. One of them pulled a gun. Target says for the safety of guests and employees, starting today, you have to shop cards through their website. What specifically caused the parking lot fight? Pokemon cards. That's right, it's not just sports. Original Pokemon sets are selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars. A mint condition Charizard, you remember him, Flying Lizard, sold for 300 G's. And a thief in Japan got busted this year when he rappelled down from the roof of a card shop, six stories, because he had to catch them all. Was Pikachu worth it? Did he choo-choo-choose you? Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Lewis Millman, Tara Gimble, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Ali Pekorn, Sasha Pesnik, Mariam Khan, Ali Wirzema, and Sarah Kolanowski. I'm Brian Milkey. See you Monday.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.